Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. George Backris, Professor of Medicine and Director of the ASH Comprehensive Hypertension Center at the University of Chicago Medicine. And I'm joined today by Professor Paul Muntner, who is a Professor of Medicine and Epidemiology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Backris.
So this is a topic today that's going to be, I think, very important, and I hope that you listen carefully because it's going to have major implications in terms of your strategy for dealing with patients. And that is the whole notion of kidney disease as an independent cardiovascular risk factor, not marker, but factor. So those of you that know about this know that kidney disease has been talked about for over a decade as being an independent risk factor for cardiovascular risk in people with kidney disease. Those defined as people with estimated GFRs of less than 60 have much higher cardiovascular risk than people with GFRs that are above 60. And the question is, how robust is the epidemiology? And we now have two superb studies published in The Lancet in October that really cover the waterfront, two very large meta-analyses. And Paul is going to talk to us today about one of those meta-analyses, and we're going to talk about some other issues related to the independence, if you will, of kidney disease, independent of blood pressure and diabetes as conferring cardiovascular risk. So, Paul, tell us about the paper that you were involved with and the implications. How did you put the data together, and how is this different than any other meta-analysis?
So, if you could clarify, are you talking about the chronic kidney disease prognosis consortium or the Tonelli paper?
No, the consortium. The consortium.
Okay, great. So for that study, there were over a dozen cohorts of people with CKD, as well as over 30 cohorts, general population cohorts that were pooled together. And what was done for the meta-analysis was an analysis for each of those cohorts separately, and they're pooled together. So within each cohort, what we did was we looked at the association between kidney function, estimated GFR, as well as kidney damage and albuminuria, and looked at the association with cardiovascular mortality, all-cause mortality, and ESRD risk. And what was unique about this study was, given the very large sample size, over 100,000 people with diabetes, over 1 million people without diabetes, we were able to look at the association and the importance of both eGFR and albuminuria for people without diabetes and with diabetes. And I think it was very interesting to see how the association and how the importance of kidney disease was present for people without diabetes and with diabetes, and the association was virtually identical.
So it didn't matter if you had diabetes. If you had kidney disease, you were in deep trouble.
Right. The association was very linear. As your GFR went down, your risk went up, just as a straight line. So it's very easy to see a strong message. There was no threshold effect, but just a straight line, and even more so for people with non-diabetic kidney disease and albuminuria. And there is just a very strong association where people with very high levels of albuminuria, and maybe not even very, not very high, but just high levels, had 3-4-fold increased risk of all-cause mortality and even greater risk of ESRD.
So let's talk about that, because I don't think anyone's arguing that if you've got more than 300 milligrams of albumin in the urine, you clearly have kidney disease and you clearly have higher cardiovascular risk. So I think that is off the table. The question really is, what about the people with microalbuminuria? The task force has said, well, screening for microalbuminuria is really not meaningful. It's not cost effective, especially in earlier stages of kidney disease when the GFR is in stage two, between 60 and 80 and 89. It's really not important. Do you agree or disagree with that based on the findings of your analysis?
Well, I think there are several ways to look at this. First of all, my personal opinion is I disagree with that, but I think there are several ways to look at it. I think there's the approach to screening. Should we screen everyone, or should we look at focused populations? Currently, it's recommended for people older than 65, people with diabetes or hypertension, and whether that should be expanded to other high-risk populations. I think there's evidence to suggest that there are other populations out there that maybe we don't need to be screening a 25-year-old for albuminuria with a 25-year-old without diabetes, without hypertension, and no family history. However, I think that we should consider the populations that may benefit from this, and not just use a global statement of the overall population. The second thing is, are these people without microalbuminuria at increased risk? And I think the data going back well beyond or well before this meta-analysis are very clear. I don't think there's much of a controversy over this. What was important in this meta-analysis was to say among people without diabetes, and these are people who may not be screened for albuminuria, among this population, there was just a clear association with 1.5 to twofold increased risk after multivariable adjustment, controlling for other risk factors for mortality. And so I think there's an increased risk in that population. And the third area, which I think is a little bit more controversial, but I think there's evidence out there that I'm happy to talk about, and I'm sure you can talk about as well, is what to do with these people when, who have microalbuminuria. And what are the interventions that can be applied? So I think
Right.
we need to think about the full picture of not just cost effectiveness, but are they really at increased risk, and what are we going to do once we identify them?
Right. Excellent point. Let me just make a point here. You mentioned family history a couple of times, and I think it's important for the listeners to appreciate that family history is the most cost-effective genetics you can ever get. There's no question that if you have a family history of kidney disease, that is a really big deal, and those patients need to be carefully monitored and looked at more so than if they didn't have kidney disease. So that's a big deal, and it's not frequently asked. Everybody asks about cardiovascular disease, nobody asks about kidney disease. So that's a big point. Number two, if there is a positive family history both for kidney disease and cardiovascular disease, then, in my opinion, especially if you're older and have diabetes, I think you absolutely should be screened for albuminuria because microalbuminuria, in many cases, is better than CRP as a cardiovascular risk marker. And I think that's an important point. Historically, it's been thought of as equating to kidney disease, but it really is a cardiovascular risk marker. I think that's the important distinction. Now, treating it. That's a whole separate issue. It's a whole nother debate, and we're not going to talk about that.
Right.
But it's very clear that if you reduce cardiovascular risk by treating blood pressure to goal, getting cholesterol to goal, getting glucose down, the hemoglobin A1Cs below 7, if you do all that, microalbuminuria gets impressively reduced, and in some cases normalized. That should be an indicator, kind of your sentinel light, that you actually are doing, the body has recognized that you're doing something good. I would argue that if you've done all that and you still have microalbuminuria that's unchanged, salt intake is a major factor in hindering the reduction of microalbuminuria, even with ACE inhibitors and ARBs. And I think people don't appreciate that. So beyond those things, what do we know from the literature that we could add or the physician can add to preventing the person from even getting to a GFR of 60, kind of early prevention? What
Sure.
else can be done?
Well, I think I don't want to look beyond those points because I think what you're saying with both controlling blood pressure as well as cholesterol is crucial, especially when we consider that people with chronic kidney disease tend to be undertreated. They're less likely to get statins. They're less likely to really have their blood pressure driven down and get to blood pressure their blood pressure to goal. So I don't think we should overlook those factors. With that said, if we're talking about prevention of chronic kidney disease, we have a very nice paper that's going to be coming out soon on lifestyle and behaviors using the American Heart Association's new metric, Life Simple 7, where we look at a combination of lifestyle factors and biochemical factors, glucose, blood pressure, cholesterol, but also physical activity, smoking, obesity, and diet. And we see very strong associations for those risk factors. So they're not just important cardiovascular risk factors, but we should think, when we think of these cardiovascular risk factors, they also apply to the prevention of chronic kidney disease.
Right. That's an excellent point. The final point that I want your opinion on, the latest KDIGO guidelines, the international guidelines for treatment of blood pressure and kidney disease have come out. And the new goal that's recommended is less than 140 over 90 for everybody. And that's a little less aggressive than what we are used to. And I've written about, you've written about. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it's pretty evidence-based, but and no one's preventing you from going to 130,
sure.
But that's not the recommendation. Thoughts?
I think if we look at the clinical trials that have been done, and the good thing is in chronic kidney disease, I think there's some very nice trials such as ASK that haven't really been done for other populations. And my read of the evidence is if someone has albuminuria, that a lower goal is protective. 130 over 80 may be protective for people who have albuminuria. For someone with a GFR less than 60, chronic kidney disease, but without albuminuria, which does represent about 75% of people with GFR less than 60, I think that the guidelines are correct. The evidence isn't there. So I think albuminuria plays an important role here to identify people who may benefit, where there's clear my read of the clinical trial data is there's a clear benefit of going to a lower goal.
Yeah, it's interesting. The first issue, there are no data in diabetic nephropathy. There's no randomized trial that has randomized blood pressure in diabetic nephropathy. So we really don't know the answer in diabetic nephropathy. And you brought up the ASK trial, and that's an excellent trial to bring up. But then there's also the RAIN trial in IgA nephropathy and the MDRD trial. Now, those people did have a lot of proteinuria, and yet the lower blood pressure goal didn't really seem to help them very much. And admittedly, short-term follow-up, it was less than 3 years.
Right.
But there wasn't drama there. I mean, it wasn't like, well, gee, if we'd waited 2 more months, we would have had something. And I think that's why they came up with that. I agree with you. And clinically, I can tell you, if you have proteinuria, I'm going to get you down to 130, 128.
Right.
If not, I'm very happy with you being at 134, 136. So this is the limitations of what we have if you want to be purely evidence-based versus applying some thinking. Any final comments, Paul?
I think that, but these studies from The Lancet are just very important in showing how chronic kidney disease, both in terms of eGFR as well as albuminuria, are important risk factors to be identified for not just ESRD, but all-cause and cardiovascular mortality.
Yeah.
And I think it just highlights the importance of screening. And even though the guidelines may say we shouldn't be screening everyone right now, I think there's a lot more thought that needs to be going into that before saying we don't need to screen anyone who doesn't have diabetes, because it's a clear risk factor that we can treat people identified a little more aggressively.
That's an excellent point to finish on. We want to encourage physicians to think, get free genetics, family history. you're going to get an estimated GFR anyway because you're getting your labs back. Keep your eye on the pie and do not allow the GFR to get to 60 if you can. And once they're down there, you should be looking at albuminuria because, in fact, it will help you give you an idea of whether you're doing well or not. So that's the bottom line. Thank you very much, Paul, for having this interview with me. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to us. Have a good day, and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and have a good New Year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.